This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Tonight, the winners of the Australian of the Year Awards will be announced. Auntie Isabel Reid is a Wiradjuri elder from Wagga and the New South Wales nominee for Senior Australian of the Year. She has been recognised for her tireless efforts on behalf of the Stolen Generations. She herself is a survivor of the Stolen Generations, in fact, the oldest one still surviving. And she was also a resident of the notorious Kuta Girls Home, where Aboriginal girls were trained to be domestic servants after they had been removed and cut off entirely from their families. Her leadership was instrumental to the state government's $74 million reparation package to the Stolen Generations. And she's much loved and admired in her local community in Wagga. Thanks for your time today, Auntie Isabel Reid.
Thank you.
Well, firstly, congratulations on your nomination. Are you feeling at all nervous about the announcement tonight?
At the moment, I don't feel it. I'm not feeling anything at the moment because I'm just numb. Because of the New South Wales one and then this, you know, it's something I can't, you know, wrap my head around at the moment.
You're still a bit gobsmacked, are you?
Well, I am.
Okay.
When you don't get something like this every day, not to me, you know, it's something that I didn't do. When you do things within the community, and which I've been doing in that, you don't do it for a reason. I just do it because I feel that it needs to be out there, you know?
Yeah. Well, you have been a absolutely devoted voice and advocate on behalf of the Stolen Generations. Why does it matter so to you that Australians understand the injustice of what happened to Aboriginal children like yourself?
Well, because so it won't ever happen again. So they'll know, you know, the significance of it. You know, and the heartbreak and the trauma and that we all went through, as well as our families probably.
No, absolutely.
And it's good for our stories to be out there. Not only my story, there's thousands of other boys and girls who were in the homes like myself, and their stories were out there too. I'm just a voice for all that. And it just happens that I suppose you only can pick one sort of thing. So, you know, my voice is out there, and I hope that it will help all those stolen survivors that are out there, you know.
Yeah, it's symbolic to them as well as being an actual personal recognition.
It does affect them as well. Yeah. It does recognise. You know, it's not just about me. I'm just one voice. I said there's thousands of voices out there, you know, and their stories are similar, but a lot of them are, you know, different to mine. And you know, it takes a lot of courage, I think is the word, to get your story out there.
Absolutely,
It's very hurtful, and you don't want to remember those sort of things, you know.
Yeah.
But because we're adults now, we have got the courage and the strength to do that.
Yeah.
And that's why our stories were told out there, and so important that people listen. And I do believe that when it comes from the people that, you know, I was a stolen, you know, child, and I told my story.
Can you tell us a bit about your story now, Auntie Isabel? Like, can you tell us about, you know, the day that you were removed from your family?
Yeah, I certainly can. I said I can remember it. I said goodbye to Mum. Dad was already gone to work, and we went off to school. It wasn't that far away, and we were coming home from school that day, about 3:30, and a truck pulled up. Big black truck, and a gentleman got out in a big suit and that, and said that he'd give us a ride home. And of course, we never thought anything about it. We said, yes, of course. Three of us jumped in, Jack and Betty and myself, we jumped in. But lo and behold, they didn't take us home. They took us to the police station, and we were in the cells there for a while. I don't know for how long, because we were terrified and screamed and cried and And I can still hear the wailing of my little sister. She was only 5.
And how old were you, Isabel, then?
I was seven. Yeah. And Jackie was 11. And in the cells, you could just imagine it, couldn't you? You know? And I often think, did Mum and Dad know? Or what happened? Did they come to find us? Or see, those things went through my head too. But anyway, the story goes that we went to the station next morning. They put us on the train, the three of us, and then we went to Sydney. We went there, and then Jack departed from us there, so we must have went to Pinchler, I'd say. And then Betty and I went to Cootamundra Girls' Home.
Did you ever see your mum and dad or your brother again?
Yes, I did when I came back. I was 16 when I came home. So I did see Mum and Dad, but they'd already parted and divorced. And they were on, you know, went their own different ways.
So that was the end of your childhood, really, that day.
Well, I mean, a child should have that upbringing of their parents, and was very, very sad that you don't get that. That's why I always much say to the children today, they need to respect their families and their mother and dad, because it's so important. When they're not there, your life just crumbles. Your child, you're a child, and all you want to do is be there with your mum, you know? And mum wasn't there, you know, to wipe the tears away when you fell over and hurt yourself and that. And they're the little things that keep creeping up to me too, although I'm an 88-year-old woman today, but I still think of those, the tears that we shed, that mum and dad weren't there to make things better.
And how do you come to terms with that loss then? Because what you really lost was your whole family
well,
in that moment.
It was my family. I lost that. And you come to terms with it over time. I was angry for a long time, but then I got married when I was only young, and then I had a little family of my own. And I think that takes away a lot of that, but not forever. It's always been there, but it just clouds it for a little while because you've got the love of your children and your husband, and long as you've got a good life, and that's what I had. So we didn't have much. We didn't even have a house to live in. When we came home, we just travelled around the countryside and built a house whenever we can. You know, we didn't have much. My husband was a shearer, so he had to go out to work. Some of the times he used to go out and then leave me home with the children, and I'd have to just manage carting mortar and wood and all that sort of stuff because we'd camp near the river. We had each other, so that was the main thing.
It's amazing that you've managed not to become bitter, that you can laugh about these stories.
I do, yeah.
And, so do you have any words of encouragement, you know, for us, for our listeners, on how to overcome the injustices of the past?
I do think that you should understand the stories that are out there, the thousands of children, the boys and girls who wrote their stories, and have a think about it. And you maybe ask them, like you're asking me, what do they think about it? And I think that's never been done.
Do you still have a special relationship with those girls that were
definitely.
There?
Oh, definitely. I talk to them plenty of times. They ring me on their birthdays and ring me when something comes up. I mean, we were sisters and brothers, you know. We were sisters in there. And they were the only sisters we ever knew. So my bonding's still with them. The survivors are all slowly passing away. We've had a few deaths with the boys and the girls. They do keep in touch with me to let me know about that. And it's very sad, but that's something we've got to face. But in the meantime, I hope that by the time that we're not all around, that some of the young people will take it up. I know my children will, because I've told the story that many times that they do, you know that I want that to be kept going. I don't want it to be swept under the carpet.
Something I wanted to ask you, just to finish up, Aunt Isabel, is I know that you do want the younger people to pick up the baton and run with this cause and to speak
of
out.
Course.
But often in the media, in mainstream media, older people can be almost hidden away and we don't hear from them.
You've been
named, you know, Senior Australian of the Year in New South Wales. So why does it matter that older Australians continue to contribute to Australian public life and to tell their stories like you have done?
Because it's so important, because if we don't get our stories out there, how will they ever know what really went on in the homes and that? Some of the stories are very raw at the moment, and some don't want to tell their stories. But there was five of us at Wagga Wagga, and we told our stories at the RSL club down here with the doors closed. And I think that's where it all started, when we all told our stories. And we needed a voice, so that's why I got out into the community, which they're blessing. And that's why you hear my voice out there. And, I mean, like I said, these awards are not just for me, they're for all those survivors, you know, Stolen Generation survivors that put their stories out there on the line as well.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story, and thanks for sharing it with us this morning, and all the very best for the ceremony tonight. We're really, our thoughts will be with you.
Yeah, there's some lovely people that are going up for the awards. They all deserve it. They all deserve credit for what they're doing, you know, in their own right.
Well, thank you so much, and all the very best.
Okay.
I've been speaking with Auntie Isabel Reed. She's a Wiradjuri elder. She's the oldest survivor of the Stolen Generations, and she's the New South Wales nominee for Senior Australian of the Year.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.